Hi, I'm Simon Brown, MoneyWeb Now podcast host, and I have news for you. You can learn to invest like a pro with MoneyWeb at the Better Investor Conference on 29 March. We'll have investing topics such as, can you retire in 2 million rand? Building generational wealth in spite of black tax? The pitfalls of investing in retirement property? Why the right financial advisor could be your best investment? How to tailor your investment strategy to mitigate SA's problems? And real-world uses for crypto? Whether a beginner or seasoned investor, this conference will help you become a better investor.
You can live stream the MoneyWeb Better Investor Conference on 29 March. For the free live stream and more info, go to moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, the MoneyWeb YouTube channel, or follow MoneyWeb News on social media. MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.
Welcome to MoneyWeb Now. Business news every morning.
It's Tuesday, 28 March. Both of the Lyft co-founders have quit the business. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, we've got Wayne McCary. We'll be touching on results from Thungela. Maybe that dividend a little bit light. And Willie's concluding the sale of David Jones. That's been the disaster. Roy Douglas from Advertech on results. Carl Wales from Flagship Asset Management. Three equity investing metrics to watch and to watch out for. This show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb. Public Service Union set to accept state's final 7.5% offer. And Business Day, Treasury to reassess GDP growth outlook. In the budget last month, the finance minister was optimistic on growth, and that's not going well. And he was optimistic on what the public sector unions would take, and that's not going well either. The budget is out the window already. Morning markets. US was mixed. S&P was up 0.2%. NASDAQ down 0.75%. Asia is green, with Sydney up 0.2%. And Tokyo, handful of points to the green, 0.07%. Commodities mostly green. Gold was a bit weaker, $1,978. Brent, $77.77 a barrel. Platinum, $986. Palladium, 1,416. Rand, 18.24. Bitcoin trading, $27,000 a coin. Tencent up 4.1% in Hong Kong. And top 40 opening call, looking for about a 550 point open to the green. That is 0.8% to the upside.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Trading now with Wayne McCary, FNB Wealth and Investments. Wayne, appreciate the early morning time. Thungela Resources results out. I mean, the headline earnings per share seemed largely in line. The dividend perhaps, certainly a little lighter than consensus. Their big issue is coal prices coming down a bit. Their bigger issue is Transnet. I mean, they wouldn't even give guidance because of Transnet uncertainty.
Yeah, look, I mean, this whole Transnet thing, both them and the iron ore line, I mean, it's actually terrible and affecting not just the companies, affecting the country as well. Surely the privatization of Transnet must get speeded up now, but at least there have been actions in that line, in that field. But look, when you read the results, I mean, they look absolutely fantastic. Everything's up, you know, dividends are up 500%, but that's the nature of a commodity company. You know, you don't know what next year is going to be. Yeah. You just don't know. Because of supply, as you said, supply concerns, price issues. But certainly, this is probably peak earnings, you know. I think it's definitely peak earnings. And it's also interesting when you evaluate a set of results like that, why does the market push the share down? It's because the market was anticipating more.
Yeah, wanted even more. I think it was Keith McLachlan on Twitter who commented that their trailing dividend yield is 51%, which is staggering. But of course, what's the future dividend going to be? A different story. Willie's, which really was an advisory to the market, finally concluding the sale of David Jones. I mean, it's been an absolute disaster. I suppose the stock didn't respond much, but it is nice that that is now finally over and behind them.
Yeah, look, so many South African companies have gone to mainly the UK, but to Australia as well, and had a disaster and wrote off a lot of money and a lot of reputation in doing it. Look, they're not totally out of Australia. I mean, they still got the other business in Australia.
Yeah.
And they still own the building in Elizabeth Street. One of the big flagship buildings. Yeah.
Yeah.
But they're getting a rental on that. So, but it is good news, yes.
Yeah, good to have them back. A quick point from you, MPC, Thursday, consensus seems to be 0.25 up. I mean, I could see an argument to leave unchanged, especially if the Fed is either pausing or close to the top.
Yeah, but they'll still do a quarter. You know, you can if the Fed starts to pause or starts to reverse, they can reverse as well. And a quarter percent, it's not big in the bigger scheme of things of how far interest rates have come.
Mm.
And you've got to defend the currency as well. And the Rand's looking, you know, above 18 there. I don't think it'll like it if you don't get another hike.
Okay, and I take your point as well. Quarters, it's small, it hurts, but it's small. And they can reverse quick if need be. Wayne McCurry, FNB Wealth and Investments, appreciate the early morning.
Your money gives a damn. If it could protest and sign petitions, your money would. But your money can do more than that. When you invest in Stanlib's infrastructure investment fund, beyond getting solid returns, you are helping to build a more sustainable future through job creation and positive economic growth. Damn right you are. Invest for more impact at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Roy Douglas, CEO of Advertech. Disclaimer up front, I hold Advertech shares. Results for year-end December, revenue up 18%, headline earnings per share up 20%, dividend of 37 cents, which makes 60 cents for the year. Roy, appreciate the time today. You've grown enrollments in your education space across all divisions, and I've asked this question before, I know. Well, what sort of capacity are you at? My sense is you've got two types. You've got the current capacity and then the perhaps future capacity, and there's still a fair bit of space.
Absolutely. Yes, we do have space. I must say that, you know, the capacity utilization we measure on both full potential capacity, which we're probably running in the order of around about, say, 66%, and then built capacity, which is those that are assets already in the ground. And there we're running at 84%. And those capacity levels have lifted over the last few years as we've completed our investment program, which was realigning our assets and some of our expansions. And those occupancy levels are increasing. And they are, of course, a key driver of the leverage that we get from capacity utilization. But we still have capacity left, and we think we're comfortable at this level.
Yeah, capacity left, and as you say, the leverage effect as you fill it up. What about load shedding? I imagine education's not a giant power user, but I mean, undoubtedly you are a power user. I mean, you can't have the lights go out in the middle of a science experiment.
No, you're quite right. We're not a large user by any stretch of the imagination. Obviously, the nature of our business is such that mostly it's course during the day, but of course, there are technology implications. We've had a program of investment over the last few years where just about every one of our sites actually has additional generating capacity. And so, obviously, whilst that's not ideal, at least it addresses the inconvenience of the load shedding, albeit at a slightly higher cost. But quite honestly, It's a relatively small level or area of expenditure in the overall scheme of things in terms of our income statement. So we've been able to do that. And quite honestly, it's an area where we've leveraged the size and scope of our group in order to bring around efficiencies. And we've been able to absorb those costs without too much difficulty.
Operating margin sitting up at 19.1%, ticking higher again. What do you consider a fair? I suppose, what's the sort of group target for operating margin?
We look at our by divisions, of course, because there are some variations, and particularly with regards to our resourcing business, which is a fundamentally different business altogether with a different level of operating margin. So the group margin does get somewhat skewed by that, although it's a smaller portion. But in terms of our schools business here in South Africa, we've obviously been on a program of improving the performance of that business, and we're very pleased to see the progress that we've made. schools in South Africa now are operating at about 19.4. Mm-hmm. Our tertiary business, which is performing, you know, has been performing well for a number of years now, sets the benchmark at around about 25%. We've sustained that, and we believe that's a good level of operating margin. Our aspiration for schools in South Africa is to get to that level. And then our rest of Africa business, which we are delighted with, because we do anticipate that the rest of Africa would probably be higher levels of profitability. We've seen really good growth in terms of our operating margin there. We're operating at 23.9, so really more profitable than our schools in South Africa. And we would look to grow that margin probably to the high 20s, just shy of 30s in the sense of that business. So operating margin level, probably around about 25 for our education businesses is a benchmark.
You mentioned rest of Africa. You've got both resourcing and schools in the continent. It's still small, and it's not sort of doubling every year, but it's growing steadily. It's growing ahead of the group, and I mean, in time going to become fairly significant.
Yes, indeed. You know, we do believe that obviously, you know, South Africa's economy has seriously underperformed. There is significant pressure on consumers here in terms of disposable income, and now obviously with added inflationary pressures that have risen over the last year or so. So we see the future here in South Africa remaining a very tough economic environment. Having said that, we're still very comfortable that our portfolio of brands are well-focused. We've been concentrating on what we call educational productivity, removing any duplication and wastage, mm-hmm. concentrating on efficiency drives and trying to pass that through to the consumer as best we can. We've had a pricing strategy of at and below inflation now for a number of years, bucking the trend of where education inflation used to be 2 percentage points above inflation. So whilst we think that South Africa will remain tough, we think our brand's well positioned, but we do see good growth and good opportunities on the rest of the continent, and we're determined to pursue those with careful and cautiously considered investment opportunities. But I think the results are speaking for themselves in the sense of where the potential and the opportunity lies. We've seen really good performance from that rest of Africa business.
Last question. You mentioned SA consumer under pressure, under extreme pressure. It would be probably even that would be a cautious assessment. How are bad debts in the schooling education division in South Africa?
Our schooling business has returned another excellent performance. You know, bad debts are under 1% overall, in a sense, and we continue to manage that very carefully. Our tertiary business, we suffered a bit of an own goal, I'm afraid, in this area, Simon. It's perhaps the one area of concern in our results that we're publishing. But that was actually as a result of our progress on implementing a standardized unitary system right across our business. And we implemented that in our tertiary business. And we did have a problem with some data migration at the beginning of last year, which adversely affected our billing and the ability to get statements out. That just means that our provisions have actually escalated quite strongly during the course of this year. But it's, as I say, it is the provisions on the debtors account, and we're confident that we've overcome those problems. Certainly the billing this year and the performance of the system has been right in line with our expectation for the start of this enrollment period, and we'll collect that back. But that did push out a bit, but as I say, it's mostly related to the provisions, and the collections we've had this year are also well ahead. So that means that we're making progress on that. But nevertheless, you know, the consumer is under pressure. Yeah. It's an area of high level of focus for us, and I think historically our performance in this area has been good, and we're very confident that we'll get that tertiary back down to where it should be, as opposed to the anomaly that we experienced during the course of last year.
We'll leave it there. Roy Douglas, CEO, Advertech. Appreciate the time. And that's our poll today on LinkedIn and Twitter. And good results out there from Advertech, but I mean good results from all the education stocks to a degree. This is a very defensive sector, of course. The question we're asking you is, what is your preferred education stock? Advertech, Curo, Stadio, or perhaps none for you? Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter.
Hear that? Nothing. Your money can do more when it blocks out the noise. As hard as it is these days. When you invest in the Stanlib Balanced Cautious Fund, we manage the risks so that you can see stable inflation-beating returns through market cycles. Invest with more certainty at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib is an authorized financial services provider and a registered manager.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Carl Wales, a portfolio manager at Flagship Asset Management. Carl, appreciate the time. A recent note you sent out, 3 equity investing metrics to watch, and you kicked off with the good old-fashioned PE ratio.
Absolutely, Simon. I think the sell-off in tech shares lately has just demonstrated for us how important valuations are. So we've obviously seen a huge decline in growth stocks and a rebound in value. And that was long overdue, just given how those stocks had performed recently.
That is a good point, because of course a lot of the tech stocks had lots of P, but not much of the earnings. You also made the point that, you know, even at current levels, and here you're talking the S&P 500, if we look into the future, because of course PE is looking backwards, if we're looking to forward earnings, it's not necessarily screamingly cheap either.
Yes, so we, as I'm sure your listeners as well would know, you know, the economic climate is looking a bit dire at the moment. Many people are expecting the US especially to go into recession in the third or fourth quarter this year. And given that poor macro backdrop, you would actually expect shares to trade at a discount to their long run multiples of around 16 times, but they're currently trading at a small premium to their long run averages. And what's even more troubling about this is that forward estimates, in our view, are still quite high. Most market forecasters are expecting the earnings of the S&P 500 to decline by only 1.3% this year. Where we feel that is likely to misstate the true degree of what will happen.
Yeah, that does sound quite optimistic. The other one was revenue growth, and revenue growth is again going back to good old fashioned. You also make the one point is, you know, before we get to more revenue, is some businesses are just price takers, miners, that they don't determine the price of that gold or coal or PGM they pull out of the ground, which means revenue growth there is a bit of a misnomer, really.
Yes, absolutely. I think most businesses are actually price takers to some degree. It's not just miners. I mean, it would include telecommunications companies, for example, airlines especially. And it really is those excellent best-in-class type businesses which are able to pass through increases in the input costs onto their customers. What's interesting in the current climate, obviously with inflation being as high as it is, and therefore input cost inflation being as high as it is even some of the best quality companies are struggling to push price increases through of the magnitude that they need to without losing volumes. But it's still much better to be in one of these type of businesses than in a poorer quality business.
Yeah, you make the point around Unilever, who's struggling. I suppose, I mean, some businesses can almost sort of work with their volumes and perhaps say, you know what, we would rather fight margins than volume. A business like Unilever, which is absolutely world class, I mean, as you point out, they're struggling, which gives a sense of just how tough it is in this inflationary environment.
Yes, I sort of referenced Unilever because, as you say, it is an example of an excellent excellent company. There are some businesses that have been able to pass through price increases with very little pushback from their customers, like you know, a lot of large software companies, Adobe, Microsoft, and those type of businesses. But even very, very good businesses, some very, very good businesses are struggling at the moment.
And then the other one, the last was net debt to EBITDA, earnings before interest, taxation, depreciation, and amortization. Debt's one of those two-edged swords in many sense. And the one way, you don't want too much debt because that's scary. And the flip side is you want a bit of debt because that's where growth happens, and you've got to try and find that middle ground.
Yeah, the leverage is always great on the upside, but not great on the downside. And I think we find ourselves in one of the latter situations at the moment. I'm always amazed at how when people relax in their standards just in terms of balance sheet strength, how it normally backfires. And, you know, we see companies that optically have relatively strong balance sheets, but not as strong as it appears in some cases, that even they you know, see negative repercussions as a result of balance sheets, which are just not that strong, as opposed to weak, in fact. And that, yes.
Now, I was going to say, and that's just the point, is how it shifts. Also, it is often those details. I mean, you mentioned Anheuser-Busch, which, one, you know, by many metrics, got a lot of debt. You dig into the details. Most of it is fixed. A British American Tobacco, who's got, I think they've got 40-year bonds out there. A lot of it at fixed rates. Again, it's the quality that also matters.
Yes. Yeah. You can't just look at the headline number, because ABI. I use a high level benchmark of 2.5 to 3 times net debt to EBITDA. When it exceeds that level, I start to get a little bit nervous. And ABI, which was one of the examples you drew, sits at 3.7 times net debt to EBITDA. But as you correctly point out, most of their debt is fixed, and it's at very low interest rates. They funded the SAB acquisition at an interest rate of around 4%, and that's fixed for the next 15 years. So that's a case where you do have to scratch a little bit further to draw a suitable conclusion.
Yeah, and maybe that's the key point. Metrics to look at, but of course it's always often scratching behind the curtain to really get a full understanding. Carl Wells, Portfolio Manager, Flagship Asset Management, as always, appreciate the time. That's it for today. We're chatting with Derek Janssen from Rensburg yesterday. The authorities, local authorities, have approved the Mediclinic takeover and ultimate delisting. That leaves us only two hospital stocks, Netcare and Life Healthcare, on the exchange. We asked which are your preferred, and almost half of you said thanks, but actually neither. And then 20% each, evenly split between Netcare and Life Healthcare. And then a bunch of you actually saying prefer offshore. Have your vote, have your say, Twitter and LinkedIn. This show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobokhle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Crisis of confidence in the banking sector.
Listen to the live stream of MoneyWeb Now at the same time every weekday. For more business, finance, and investment news. MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Hi, I'm Simon Brown, MoneyWeb Now podcast host, and I have news for you. You can learn to invest like a pro with MoneyWeb at the Better Investor Conference on 29 March. We'll have investing topics such as, can you retire in 2 million rand? Building generational wealth in spite of black tax? The pitfalls of investing in retirement property? Why the right financial advisor could be your best investment? How to tailor your investment strategy to mitigate SA's problems, and real-world uses for crypto. Whether a beginner or seasoned investor, this conference will help you become a better investor.
You can live stream the MoneyWeb Better Investor Conference on 29 March. For the free live stream and more info, go to moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, the MoneyWeb YouTube channel, or follow MoneyWeb News on social media. MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.